BBC Six Music Podcasts.
Six Music.
This is a free download from the BBC.
Find out more at bbc.co.uk/sixmusic.
And now, Adam and Joe.
It's Classic Song Wars, the war of the songs. A couple of tunes by a couple of prongs. We've picked some old ones to play you today, and we're talking about them in a ludicrous way, so check it out.
Hello and welcome to Song Wars Classic. That's classic spelt K-Q-L-L-A-S-S-I-X-C-Q with a silent X. Song Wars Classic.
K-Q-L-L-A-S-S-I-X-C-Q.
Yes, the X is silent. Song Wars Classic.
Classique.
No, you see, you've pronounced it wrong.
Classique.
Wrong. Song Wars Classic is the way it's pronounced.
What is Song Wars Classic?
I'm glad you asked. You pronounced it wrong. Song Wars Classic is a collection of the greatest star. There's a little star next to the word greatest there.
Mm.
The greatest songs to come out of the Song Wars section of the Adam and Joe radio show ever.
Ah.
Here's the star.
So they'd be all mine, though. What, how do you get involved in this?
Well, here's the star. Listen to the star that was next to the word greatest.
Yeah.
Star. These are not necessarily the greatest to come out, and they are not all Joe's.
What?
They're not all Joe's.
What?
In fact, mainly, they belong to Buckley's. They were created.
What?
They were created by Dr. Buckles.
This small print had better be very small.
No, that's not true.
It's not true on either our parts. This is just a way to keep your ears happy, listeners, while we're away for the summer, to give you the chance to listen to some of your favourite Song Wars songs again. Because we've been inundated with emails saying, please, 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 Adam and Joe, please recycle your old Song Wars songs in a lazy way. And talk around them to make them sound fresh over the summer, haven't we?
You would be a rotten spin doctor.
Do you think?
When I'm in politics. No. When I'm in politics and I'm working for the Houses of Parliament, you are not going to be my spin doctor. In the Buckles version of In the Loop.
Yes.
What's it called?
It's called In the Loop.
The actual TV show, The Thick of It.
Oh, yeah, The Spinsters.
Yeah, you would have no place. You would not be my foul-mouthed spin doctor.
Oh, I'm glad.
Because, you know, the fact is that what we're giving here, you were right about...
You sounded like Simon Cowell just then.
Did I?
The fact is that what we're giving here...
We're giving something very special.
The fact is, Tippy Toes, I've never seen a dog do what you do. And for that reason, you're through the next round.
This is the best song I've ever heard in my life. Should we start off then? Should we explain which category we're going to go first with?
Yes.
Now, this was a Song Wars when we were going to write something sexy. Whose idea was this? Was it yours?
I can't remember. I really don't remember. It was an erotic. That was the only brief, wasn't it? Just an erotic song.
It was a listener, I think, who suggested this. But
that's right. It was the idea of family-friendly erotica.
Right.
So it was something a little bit saucy, a little bit sexy that could still go out on a Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
It was a minefield. We could have gone wrong in so many ways. It could have been inappropriate in so many ways, but you know, we really nailed it.
Shall we toss a coin? Because some listeners will know about who won that week.
Does that sound conceited that I said we really nailed it?
No, it's just another one of your silly lies.
That's true. That's all right. People are used to them.
Here's a coin. Heads or tails to go first?
Well, I think I'll go for heads.
Okay. Joe Cornish, heads to go first.
What's the point of this?
Well, because...
Coin tossing.
Because so we establish who goes first.
Right.
Because some of the listeners don't know who won that
Maybe the losing song should always go first and then the winning song should go second.
No, because they don't know who's won yet.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Like an extra element
for people who've never heard it. You're right.
All right. So heads to go first.
Yep.
Heads it is.
Heads
Joe
it
Cornish
is.
Goes first. Do you want to say a bit about your song or do you want to leave it till after?
I'll leave it till after. I'll just give you the introduction. This is Dr. Sexy and it's all about a very sexy doctor. Yeah, you wouldn't have guessed that, would you?
Like Dr. Fox?
No, nothing like Dr. Fox. Oh. Here it is.
The doctor's ready to see you if you'd like to go through.
My name is Dr. Sexy. I've got just what you need. But I ain't got no medical degree.
Know what I mean?
I diagnose that you have sexy disease. The symptoms include hotness and the wearing of tight jeans. Would you pop this in your mouth? Don't worry, it's clean.
It's just a thermometer.
Oh my God, now she's hotter than anyone I've ever seen.
Nurse Tortillas, is your diagnosis the same as mine?
Yes, Dr. Sexy, it's outrageous. And I think she's so hot, it's contagious. I can't fake it, I can't take it. And I'm feeling the urge to get naked.
That kind of talk's inappropriate, Nurse Tortillas. What kind of a doctor's surgery do you think this is?
Sexy, sexy doctor, Dr. Sexy.
Oh yes, I nearly forgot.
My name is Dr. Sexy, but I'm not NHS. This is a private practice, now pop off your vest. Can I try an experimental technique I learned in Japan? My tools. Let's break some British Medical Association rules.
Dr. Sexy, you'll be struck off for that.
Sounds good.
Oh, doctor.
I got a very nice email from John Ronson, the famous, brilliant journalist, immediately after playing that. He said it was the funniest thing he'd ever heard, but then he's been in prison for a long time.
Yeah.
That's not true. No, but that was very nice. And that was not the song, but, you know, Ronners to send me that. That had a sample from Dave Matthews mm-hmm. from a funk album called Sandworm.
Ooh.
It's a kind of funk interpretation of great sci-fi works.
Right. And is that it really?
Yeah, and that's a funk interpretation of the Sandworms from Dune.
Din-din-din-din.
Yeah.
Din-din-din-din. Yeah. Doesn't remind me of Sandworms.
Well, that's the kind of music the Sandworms from Dune would play if they were in a band.
Right.
Like the Star Wars Cantina band, because most aliens are in bands.
Sure.
Most of them have a sort of cantina-type gig.
And they play futuristic music.
They play futuristic jazz funk, usually, but these particular Sandworms, I mean, they're huge.
Mm.
So they can only play in very, very big venues. They find it harder to get their bookings.
When you say huge, famous...
No, I mean absolutely vast.
I mean
they're like miles long.
Like you too.
Yeah, are they that big?
Well, they're huge.
Who's the lead one called? Bono.
Bon,
he's like a little
Bon.
Leprechaun, isn't he? Tiny little elf man.
No, he's huge.
Is he huge?
He's absolutely huge.
Really?
The biggest band in the world.
Anyway, that's the story behind the sample there. And then the beat's enhanced with a chaosillator, of course.
Right.
But wow, what a sexy song.
This is classic albums, ladies
the
and
stories
gentlemen.
Behind the tracks that have become evergreen classics.
That's amazing stuff.
That's amazing. Any questions, Adam, about that song?
What was it like? Did you know when you were making it, when you were creating
yes.
Dr. Sexy,
yes.
did you have any inclination of what it was going to turn out like?
No, I very much... I'm answering this question seriously. It's a serious question, right?
Yes.
No, I didn't. You know, I just go with the flow.
When
I compose, it's like God is speaking through me.
Right.
I sort of lose control and I enter this blissful zone where losing control is control. And
Camden.
Yes, Camden on a Friday night.
Right.
Does that answer your question?
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing.
That's okay.
Do you want to hear my song?
No. I don't. No, I do. I like this song. It's about dirty robots and it's got all sorts of brilliant computer type dirty metaphors, SCSI ports, 16-pin DINs. It's all about slotting things into things.
That's the basic joke.
Which is a sexy idea.
Plugging things in.
Because, of course, human sexual intercourse involves a little bit of plugging.
A little,
and some compatible male and female
right.
lead.
Sloppy drive.
Sloppy drive.
I didn't actually have the 16-pin right. DIN joke in there. Well,
no, you should have.
That's one I missed.
Yeah, that's more, yeah.
Look at your 16-pin DIN.
It's more like a sort of Japanese porno DVD.
Let's have a listen.
I'm a dirty robot, please would you clean me? I need a wipe down with a lovely oily rag. There's something stuck inside my special tube. I wonder if you'd be so kind as to remove it. I would like to dip up to your port with my connector. There won't be viruses with my connector.
We're dirty robots. We're dirty robots. We've come from the past in search of models with slots. Our discs are all floppy. It makes us quite stroppy, because we're incompatible when we get the hots. Now it's all wireless. There's the connection. It's nice to just be scuzzy, even if you get some knots. Satnav likes me, she's seen my modem hanging out. That's right, babe, it's enormous, and it does the job, well, just about. Here, let's get connected. There we go, now you can send me dirty pictures, very, very slow. Now where's your lovely hard drive box? Have you got a slot for me? Hey, what's the problem? Why'd you kick me in the USB? We're dirty robots, we're dirty robots. We wish to connect with other machines with slots. We're not that picky, but we're finding it tricky, 'cause no one seems to want to, and we thought there'd be lots. So we're sticking our cables wherever we're able, which sometimes can result in some extremely nasty shocks. Dirty robots, dirty robots. We'll hook up with toasters, we'll hook up with clocks. We'll plug into freezers, we're filthy metal geezers. To us, a parking meter is a bit of a fox. If it's got machine parts, then that's where the fun starts. And if it is electric, then of course that also rocks. Dirty robots, dirty robots. We come from the past in search of models with slots. Our discs are all floppy, it makes us quite stroppy, because we're incompatible when we get the hots. Dirty robots, dirty robots, dirty robots, dirty robots.
That's a long one, isn't it?
If I had a criticism, I would say that it was maybe 4 or 5 verses too long.
I disagree. I think you really struck out into new territory there by having a long instrumental passage.
After the first
verse. Yeah, because it's unusual, isn't it? That middle eight usually comes sort of 2/3 of the way through. But there you pulled it up to the beginning. And there's a couple of lyrics I'd like to ask you about. There's something stuck inside my special tube. What's happening there?
What is happening there?
I mean, kidney stone?
Kiss my special tube.
A kidney stone? Or, you know, it's just that robots... I just wonder what was happening there, you know?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Don't know.
It's dramatic. That's a good answer, though.
This is what they should have on classic albums, isn't it?
Don't know. So, Mr. McCartney, where did that lyric come from?
I don't know. Great.
And during the long instrumental passage, there's very few lyrics, but then in a robot voice in the background, you say, shiny knobs.
Shiny metal knobs.
Where did you get that idea?
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because the word knob can be used to mean a couple of things. One, like a pulling...
An operational pulling thing.
Protrusion. Yeah. Or a buton for activating machinery. Mm. Or... And I don't know if you knew this.
Yeah.
It can be used to refer to the male willoy.
The male knob.
Or wink wonk.
Yeah. I did know that.
Yeah. Well, so in my song, that's what was happening.
Well, it's a good song. And yeah. That was a hard fought battle. In the end, Dr. Sexy won.
Dr. Sexy absolutely creamed me that week. I don't think it was a total walk. Sometimes in Song Wars, I've been beaten like by 95% to Joe Cornballs, and I've just got nothing. But that week, I think I got about maybe 15% of them. I might be wrong, but I didn't get totally 100% pureed. But it was pretty convincing.
And that, Dr. Sexy then sort of became my name for lots of listeners. One of my nicknames.
That's right.
That I'm not displeased about.
No. Well, someone even made a video for that song, didn't they?
Did they?
Of them grooving around to it. A lady.
A lady?
It's up on YouTube,
A woman.
A woman.
That's exciting. Anyway, wow. I mean, those songs are going to sit very differently in listeners' heads now that they've been contextualised like that, don't you think?
Absolutely.
All the anecdotes behind the making of them.
Very much so. Interesting stuff.
Interesting insights. Stuff.
We should remind people that not only are those songs now immortalised in the context of this fascinating chitter-chatter, but also you can download them as individual MP3s from our blog.
Yeah, just like real songs.
Exactly.
Imagine.
Almost exactly like real songs. So don't forget to visit the blog where you can find all those things and so much more besides.
And the address is bbc.co.uk/blogs/Adam and Joe. And you'll find those songs as well as all sorts of other nonsense.
Adam's really great and he's wonderful. Joe is really, really, really brilliant.
They're fantastic.
But which one is the best?
It's Joe.
Now, a couple of weeks back, when it wasn't quite so cold, me and my family went to have some family fun at a place called Pleasurewood Hills over in East Anglia. It's, you know, other theme parks.
Sounds like a dirty park.
Are available.
I mean, it doesn't sound like a place to take the kids, to be perfectly honest.
I'd never thought of it like that, but it does sound dirty, doesn't it? Pleasurewood Hills. Anyway, it's not. It's an absolutely delightful...
Three of the sexiest words in the English language.
It's true, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. They are the backbone of the porn industry, those words. So why would you want to take your family...
Especially Hills. I mean, that's dirty.
A big, dirty theme park. It's not like that at all. Obviously, it's a family fun day out, and it's a very enjoyable one too. And we were having such a good time there.
What did they have there?
They had...
I mean, I'd hope they had woods and hills.
It was gently rolling hills. There was some attractions that were made of wood, mainly fiberglass.
What kind of things?
Slides.
Bums?
Water chutes, slides, bums, a giant bum.
Fiberglass bums.
A huge woman that you could walk inside. What? Usual stuff.
Come on, focus.
What? You're the one who...
Just like the image of you and your family going to Pleasurewood Hills and playing on the fiberglass bums. That would be fun. You could slide down the crack and...
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
They didn't have any of that, right? It's a nice place. It's a nice family place. Although, you know, if we ever got like some spare time and money... We could certainly think about setting up that other theme park. I think it would be nice. But we were queuing up for one ride. It wasn't so much a ride. It was a little bit like one of those.
Oh, God.
What are you thinking of the word ride?
Well, keep talking.
Come on, smutty-minded Cornish man.
Just fun. So you were queuing up for a ride.
Queuing up for a ride.
Yeah, what?
Now, we had a few messages from people who had heard my voice on the Philippe Starck sort of, what would you call it? It's not really a documentary, is it?
I don't think it is a documentary.
It's one of those kind of elimination
shows. It's a reality
shows.
Series.
It's like a reality elimination thing, a little bit like The Apprentice.
It's a design apprentice.
Right.
The Apprentice for Contemporary Design.
And it's on BBC, is it on Tuesday evenings?
I don't know.
Sometime around.
It's a prime time proposition, though. It's like a 9 o'clock thing. And
he's a ridiculous, over-the-top French design figure. I mean, he's a legend
quite brilliant.
In the industry. You reckon he's brilliant, do you?
Well, he's very... Yeah, he is, because he's completely distinct, and you can tell a Philippe Starck thing.
Can you? What's his most famous design?
The Philippe Starck golf ball, of course.
Is that true?
Yes, it is a triangle.
Well, someone suggested the other day that I replace or fool around with the VO, because I do the voiceover,
right? You do the voiceover, yeah, and it is disconcerting for... I mean, I sat down and watched it the first week it was on.
And I'm trying to do
it had your voice on it.
I tried to do a serious one as well.
Yeah, but it's hard not for it to be a bit funny, even when you try and do your serious voice.
I was directed to be serious by the director.
But it's odd, and especially when we know that you do... quite an outrageously peculiar French accent yourself.
Yeah.
It does not sound dissimilar to Stark's outrageously peculiar French accent.
Well, with that in mind, I've slightly retooled the first minute or so of the programme.
Good one.
World-renowned designer Philippe Starck has set out to find Britain's best young creative talent.
Great design is all about the unexpected idea, like a bed made out of glass, or a glass made out of glass and a bed.
From hundreds of online applicants, he chose 12 to join his School of Design in Paris.
Bonjour, les Anglais, poubou-la-la.
Now he's putting them through their paces to find the best of the best.
I'll use the best of the best.
Yes.
Okay, you stay.
Thank you.
One up-and-coming designer who's worthy of a place at his own agency.
I am crazy. Okay, I'll say what I think, because I'm a genius. Look at my nipples.
So far, he has challenged them to rethink everything they know.
Okay, you know mugs, okay, for drinking the coffee, the tea? Rethink. Instead, use the smashed hat of a tramp.
He has praised their high moments.
Oh, Tina, you make the chair out of the lolly sticks. That's clever.
And slammed their low ones.
This chair is made of actual lollies. That's no good.
And when students fail to meet his exacting standards...
Why do none of the mice have shoes? Can you tell me this? Where are the shoes for the mice?
A return journey through the Channel Tunnel beckons.
I want you to go out through the Channel Tunnel now, like a big fart, because that's what you are to me, a massive... great fart of a person. Go, go away, get out of my sight, out of it now. And take your lolly chair with you.
That's a better program.
Yeah, come on.
It's a much better program. You know what I'd also like to hear is the voiceover done in that voice as well. Just the whole thing.
Wall to wall.
Just insane French-orama.
And have, instead of British students, insane French students as well.
That was excellent.
I'm a funny person. I often make up jokes. My jokes are more amusing than those of other folks. When you hear my joke, I think you'll find that you agree. Come on, you're all invited to a made-up joke party.
So the idea here, listeners, is these are authored jokes, right?
Yeah.
You have to be honest about it and send us in jokes that you've actually thought of. We're going to apply various rigorous criteria to them to make sure we only get the freshest baked jokes.
And there's been an awful lot of controversy about who's been stealing whose jokes and who's been claiming that their jokes were theirs. Sophie Ellis-Bextor was on Twitter the other day.
Using the Schwarzenegger joke.
Yeah. I still love Easter, baby.
Yeah.
And she was using it uncredited.
But then if we get upset about that,
I'm not upset about
inferring it. Inferring that we, or the person who sent us that joke, made it up.
Yeah.
Do we think that?
Well, I don't know. You see, you get into difficult territory, don't you?
You see, again, hasta la vista, baby. When does that date from?
Well, that's the 80s, isn't it?
Mm.
Late 80s?
Exactly. So someone must have thought of it.
I still love before. Easter, baby.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, here's a message as well from someone else who feels very wronged. Messrs. Buxton and Cornish. He says, this is Simon, and he says, I'm a 24-year-old architect and find great joy in your podcast, which I enjoy very much. You might remember me as I was the one who kindly sent you my badminton joke earlier in the year. I was listening this week and I was deeply saddened by you accrediting my joke to Tim Vine. That was you who was saying that joke.
Well, I think somebody sent that in as an accusation.
Who the bloody hell is Tim Vine? And I'm sorry about that swearing there, listeners. A lot of my friends listen to your podcasts, and when you read out my joke, I enjoyed near celebrity status for a while. Well, a week anyway. Especially after you used my joke in the Glastonbury tent, which we did. We read out like the best, our favourite jokes.
It went down very well. It's a good joke. There's no doubting that.
Can you remind us what the joke was?
My dog ate a shuttlecock. My dog Minton ate a shuttlecock. Badminton.
It's a smash.
It's a smash.
He says, now you've thrown my contribution to your show back in my face, in capitals, and you've ridiculed me in front of the nation. I can genuinely say I did author that joke, and I now apologise for trying to spread a little joy and contribute to the magic you chaps produce on the airwaves. Maybe this Tim Vine chap nicked the joke off me, eh? What about that? Summary of this ranting email in Captain Duck children's book style. This is something we did on the podcast the other day. We did an intro in like a children's book. He says, my Minton joke read on Adam and Joe. How proud could I be to get on the show? But after using the joke, the joy is short-lived. Buckles and Cornballs just called me a div. I tell you the truth, this isn't a whine. I've never even heard of chuffing Tim Vine. No faith in this listener has caused me great pain. Oh, Adam and Joe, redeem my good name. Kind regards, must get back to work, Simon. So thanks, Simon, and I'm sorry, you know, sorry if you feel you've been humiliated and your joke's been misdirected, the credit's been misdirected there. But I hope you feel as if justice has been done now. And that's the end of Made Up Jokes this week. It's not. We've actually got some real ones. Have you got one there, Joe?
Yeah, here's one. This is a short, punchy one. Here's one from John Gibbons. How does Alan Sugar get his kids to go to bed? You're tired.
Nice.
I like that one. It's practical.
That's good.
It's a household joke. It's useful.
All right, let's keep it short and punchy with this one from... Oh, he's someone in Kathmandu. I didn't write down the name. What a jerk. Dear. It's a good joke as well. What sort of food does Sean Connery refuse to share?
I don't know.
Shellfish. I mean, that's probably not authored. There's probably been a few authors there. What's wrong with that?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
Shellfish. It's a good partner to...
Well, because we read out Tennis as well, didn't we?
Yeah, that's good too.
Yeah.
That would be good in America.
Here's one I think is probably authored. Oh, no, I haven't put the name down on this one either.
Oh, sorry about that.
It's been a shaky week.
Yeah.
Why can I always rely on my friend, the baking rasta bird? Because he's my bread wren.
Bread wren.
That's like an inner city kind of an urban joke.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah.
That's down on the front line there telling that joke. Here's one from like Brendan Blackshaw in Watford. And this is the first of a couple of incredibly technical ones, right?
Good, good.
What do you call a group of bad writers who are pregnant and living in South London when they experience false contractions? Brixton Hacks. It says, Adam, you may need to explain this one to Joe, as it's probably one for mums and dads. Love the show, but did you get that
one,
Joe?
But then again, I live in Brixton, so I should at least be able to get half of it.
Have you heard of Braxton Hicks?
No, what is that?
Yeah, they're contractions, like phantom contractions that come at the beginning of...
Is that somebody's name? Braxton Hicks?
Well, presumably the phenomenon was named after a medical person called Braxton Hicks.
Would that be a nice thing to have named after you?
Phantom Contractions.
Is there a band called Phantom Contractions?
Well, maybe there is
there
now.
Should be.
That's a good joke, though, Brendan.
Yeah,
Blackshaw.
That is good. Here's one from James
Brixton
in Melbourne.
Hacks.
Hi, guys. A couple of nights ago, while I was asleep and dreaming, I thought of a joke and it went like this. What do you call an elderly lady detective with a weight problem? Glandular Lansbury.
Nice. I read that one. That made me chuckle.
It's good.
Well. Do you want another technical one?
Yes.
It's this is from Nick in Nottingham. Dear Buckles and Cornballs, hi. This is a joke my friend Henry made up. He's very proud of it. Question. How much does energy cost? Answer. ATP. And then he goes on to explain. In biology, ATP, the letters, stands for adenosine triphosphate, which is an energy source produced during cellular respiration and viewed by biologists to be the energy currency of life. This is basic GCSE science, so hopefully the joke will find a wide audience that it so richly deserves. Love the show, guys. Nick in Nottingham. ATP.
That's funny, that's funny.
Adenosine.
I mean, it's not a sort of a belly, it's not a belly laugh, because it's very academic. It's a kind of intellectual titter.
It's not the kind of thing that Peter Kay is going to be weaning
no,
out.
It's a sort of rarefied, yeah, Jeeves and Worcester chuckle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I could see Michael McIntyre doing it, though.
We've had some trouble with Harry Potter jokes in the recent past. They're controversial things, but here's one I think there'll be no arguing over from Christopher Matheson in New York City. Hi, Adam and Joe. I know you're both film buffs, but did you hear about that new film about a speleologist working out of the Zimbabwean capital who would get very angry every time he had to excrete either saliva from his mouth or flatulence from his buttocks?
Whoa.
It was called Harare Potholer and the Gob Stroke Let Off Ire.
Oh my goodness.
Harare Potholer and the Gob Let Off Ire.
Who's that
from? Do you get it? Christopher Matheson in New York City. I mean, that's brilliant.
You know what? I heard that on Mock the Week last week.
Did you?
Yeah. That one's doing the rounds. Thank you very much for all your made-up jokes
it?
There. Have you got one last one?
What does Mr. Miyagi do to relax? Wax off.
You can't tell that.
I can't tell that. That was from... who was that from?
Take it back.
Will the Thrill. I take it back. No, it's like wax on, wax off.
Wax on. Is that what Mr. Miyagi says?
Yeah, when he trains the kid in The Karate Kid.
Does he?
Yeah. It does have a
you
double
meaning.
You
didn't explain that bit, though, did you? So as
Wait,
far
Mr.
as
Mr. Miyagi. Everyone knows who Mr. Miyagi is.
I didn't know that. I know who Mr. Miyagi is. I didn't know the technical term for what he does, wax on, wax off.
Are you shocked?
I'm really shocked. We've had swear... Yeah, this has been a racy segment.
It's a dangerous program. This program's edgy.
This is edgy.
Ouch. Yo, what's going on? What's the scene? Who the heck are these crazy guys? Well, one's called Adam and the other's called Joe, and you're listening to their podcast. Oh!
We were talking the other day about songs that you kind of customize so that you can sing them as part of your everyday routine. This all started with someone saying that they sung Lock the Taskbar, Lock the Taskbar.
Only somebody emailed us in annoyed that we said it in a kind of posh voice and elongated the A.
Oh, yeah.
Because, of course, it could be Taskbar.
Yeah, Lock the Taskbar.
If you're from a different area of Britain.
Well,
somebody
that's how
got quite angry in a class-orientated way.
Really?
Via email, yeah.
People do that, don't
said
they?
Said we were too posh to execute that
class
joke
war.
Properly.
Tough luck, Buster.
Yeah, socialist worker.
Yeah. Well, we've got a couple more here. Some good ones have come in. Actually, this one is from Steve, a.k.a. Stephen, exclamation mark, right. Curran, the man at the very epicentre of the Stephen phenomenon.
He's one of the founding stones of the show.
He is the Rosetta Stone
of
this programme. Steve Curran says, when my flatmate and I are drinking red wine, we sometimes open the bottle a little beforehand to let it breathe. It improves the taste, of course. When we do this, we like to sing, let it breathe, let it breathe, let it breathe, let it breathe, to the tune of Let It Be by the
Beatles.
That's
good.
Yeah. That's a posh one as well. I like that one. Let it breathe. They could hold hands and sing that one
as
well.
Yeah, everyone could sing in unison.
Well, that is so bourgeois, isn't it? While they're waiting for their wine to breathe a little bit. I love that. Here's one from Graham. He says, I used to have a pair of blue boxers with pictures of wolves on them, given to me by my mum. Mum gives the best pants, don't they?
I love his mum.
I mean, they always give good pants.
Mums have just got a really good sense of pants.
They really
They're born
do.
With it.
Yeah. It's true, isn't it?
Yeah, mums and pants, they know their pants.
A woman. Which I became very attached to, my wolf pants, says Graham. When donning them over morning, I used to sing to the tune of Mr. Sandman, Mr. Wolf Pants, show me your pants, bong, 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 make them a nice pair of blue shiny scants.
Yeah.
What's wrong
Not
with that?
Sure what to say. Nothing.
Mr. Wolfpants. Show me your pants. Bong, 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 bong.
Mr. Wolfpants.
That's good, Graham. He says it used to amuse me no end and may actually have led to the early demise of some of my relationships. Worth it, though, I think, and I miss them dearly. It is sad when a favourite pair of pants is no longer usable.
Do you think he sung that when he was with a lady and maybe they were reaching a
special moment.
An intimate moment in their relationship.
And he comes
and
out.
And he was dropping his drawbridges and the wolf pants. Do you think he would sing that at that moment? Mr. Wolf Pants. Would that get a lady going? Would things continue as planned? You don't see that in many films, do you?
Imagine, though.
Mr. Wolf Pants.
Show me your pants. Boom, 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 boom. Make them a nice pair of blue shiny scants. Bum, bum, bum. Please turn on your magic beam.
Ooh,
Mr.
Hello.
Wolf Pants,
please
bring
turn
me
on your magic
drink.
Beam.
I just finished that bit for him. I think that would be a sexy scene in a
that's
film.
Sexy.
Can you imagine, though, if you met a girl and without prompting, she sang to you that song, you know? So you drop your trousers and she sees your wolf pants for the first time and she just starts spontaneously singing, Mr. Wolf Pants.
In that slightly sexy, breathy voice.
Yeah.
So she's really excited. Mr. Wolf Pants. That's far-fetched, man. That's really far-fetched.
Yeah, but you would know that you found
happened,
the one.
Yeah, if that happened, you should just live on a desert island on your own, the two of you, forever.
Your wolf pants would just explode off you with excitement at that point.
Yeah.
Adam and Joe, Adam and Joe, Adam and Joe, the podcast. Adam and Joe,
touch me.
Adam and Joe,
no, not
Adam and Joe.
MPs, expenses.
Oh, I'm glad you've brought this up because there hasn't been enough talk about this subject in the media.
I know you like hot button topics.
I love hot button topics.
I saw Dervla Kerwin. Do you know the actress Dervla Kerwin? She was in Ballykiss Angel and she's a well-known TV actress. And she was on The One Show. Is it still called The One Show?
Yes.
With Adrian Childs and the lady. And they were talking about MPs' expenses and that. And they just asked Dervla Kerwin. And I thought maybe she'd come out with some kind of wishy-washy. Yeah, you know, well, that's shocking. That's what I would come out with if I was asked about that on a TV show. She was absolutely adamant. She said, it's a disgrace. Yeah. It's an absolute disgrace. We've been let down. I spent my whole life being honest. I never fiddled a single thing in my life. And I think it's shocking. And even Adrian Charles was like, what, you never fiddled anything? Not a single thing, you've been dishonored. No! Came the answer from, she said it nicer than that. She didn't shout. But her attitude was saying,
well, now I'm worried about you and Adrian Charles.
Why?
Because you've clearly fiddled things.
Have you not fiddled nothing?
Never.
Never. I've never
fiddled anything.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you. I do believe Dervla Kerwin. I don't believe you. You are the fiddler. You're Johnny Fiddler.
What thing to accuse me of? What's your evidence?
You're the Yehudi Menuhin of life.
I fiddled.
You love to fiddle.
What? Where's your evidence?
I don't know. I'm projecting. I fiddled lots of things.
Well, clearly.
Have you never... You've never taken, like, toilet paper from work?
No.
Bit of computer printing paper?
Pens. Sometimes I steal pens.
You're the fiddler.
Biros. Yehudi Menuhin. Is that bad?
Yes.
Could an MP be thrown out of court for nicking a biro?
Definitely.
What about a lighter? Sometimes I go home with other people's lighters in the past. I've done that.
Public apology.
I hereby apologise unreservedly to listeners of the BBC for
right out of
in 1985 taking Chris Barnes's Bic lighter accidentally from his house.
Now you've busted Barnes for being a filthy smoker. He's not going to thank you for that.
This was in the 80s.
Yeah, well.
Everyone smoked in the 80s.
That's true.
It was healthy back
then. It was acceptable in the 80s.
That's the only thing you've ever fiddled, is it?
You've never tried to...
You are such a liar.
No, I'm not a big fiddler. I'm not a big fiddler, but I'm...
He can't even look at me.
Well, I'm not looking at it because I'm starting to remember some of your fiddles, and I don't want to talk
your fiddles?
About them on the air.
What about the photographs that we've got of your fiddles, all the good times that we used to have?
Oh, okay. Now I'm remembering. That wasn't fiddling. That was stealing.
Oh, right.
That wasn't as subtle as fiddling.
Fiddling's a nice
that
word
was just
for stealing.
That was just theft. I may have done some shoplifting
in
the 80s, but that's something that lots of kids go through.
That's not true, and we're not encouraging it by any means.
No, it's a terrible thing, but that's a bit different. That's a kind of rite of passage when you're discovering the nature of property.
You weren't
and
shoplifting,
theft.
Though, come on.
I was.
No,
kind of.
Wasn't.
All right.
Wasn't technically shoplifting. As a member of the Big British Cast, you could even get thrown out retrospectively for admitting something like
I did in 1986.
Yeah, definitely. Come on. If they're putting people in prison with DNA evidence, you know, I mean, that's murder, obviously, it's slightly different, but... Yeah, they could retrospectively caution you, hang you out, because they don't. The castle doesn't want...
I can't believe that this link has ended up with me being forced into a criminal confession.
I didn't
about
force
you. Petty shoplifting I did in the mid 80s when it started out with MPs tax fiddling, and now I'm on the ropes.
See, this is
I've
a
already
good,
got eye
this
twitch
is a good
and
example
a bad chest.
Of me. Not, I didn't. Want you to confess to any grand larceny. I was interested in like pens.
I've been skillfully
and
manipulated. I've been skillfully manipulated by Sherlock Buxton into making a confession.
You needed cheering up because you were feeling rather low. But now you're doing brilliant thanks to Adam and to Joe and their podcast.
So listen, let's talk about something serious instead.
Okay. Oh, God.
You know when you buy clothes and you need to try them on?
I can remember.
And you go into a changing room.
Sure.
And there's no mirror in the changing room.
Oh.
And you put your new pair of trousers on.
Because you're expected to go out of the changing room.
That's what I'm getting to. So you've got a new pair of trousers.
Thrungeons.
Or a jocket.
Yeah.
And you pop it on and in the changing room. Which is already slightly disturbing, you know, standing around in your knickknacks in a weird cubicle.
Sexy.
And then you want to see a reflection of yourself to see how the jockets and the knickknacks and the pantaloons look.
And the trousers.
The trousers.
Yeah.
So you have to usually step outside the changing room and go to some sort of mirror.
Yes.
That is usually very publicly placed.
Communal.
In the middle of the shop floor.
That's right.
You usually don't have your shoes on.
Mm-hmm.
Because who would put their shoes back on just to check the fit of a pair of trousers?
Only a bore.
So you end up... Also, you might have a piece of clothing that overhangs the top of the trousers.
Also, the trousers might not even look good on you. You might look like an absolute wally.
With all these things going against you, you open the door to your cubicle and you stride boldly out onto the shop floor where other customers are free to look at you and make judgments.
Look at that idiot hole.
Because that's what happens. You go up to the mirror
and
you look at yourself, and then do you or do you not do some little poses?
Sure.
And are or are they not everyone else in the shop? This isn't a very good sentence. Looking at you.
Are or are they not everyone else in the shop looking at you?
Yeah. Is that not the case?
Yeah, checking out your posing.
Usually thinking, they don't look very good.
Your bum looks big in that.
And then usually you have to pull up your shirt a bit to see the waist.
Yeah.
Or to see how the bottom looks.
Uh-huh.
The Botox. Does that not happen to you?
Yes, of course. And do you go over the top on the posing to make a joke out of it?
Sometimes I make it a little bit silly, yeah, or I grin.
Mm.
Usually I like to have someone else there, like my lady girlfriend partner.
Then it's very easy because you could be...
You can talk to her, you feel secure,
it's
you
like
make funny faces.
Exactly.
When you're on your own, it's terrifying.
That when you're on your own, the public in the store becomes your audience and you're performing for them. Joe, don't get me started. Now, what I
do... you're being really supportive with this one. Thank you. That's right. Really good.
No, listen, I'm serious.
Get started.
Joe Cornish. Cornballs, Admiral.
You know, I feel I've identified a brilliant little corner of human paranoia.
You have. What I do is I'd never have the presence of mind to make a joke out of it and do like a ostentatiously silly pose.
Yeah.
And what I do is I look absolute. I scurry out. I sneak a glance at myself in the mirror, probably not even long enough to establish whether the trousers really do look good or not.
Yeah.
And then I scurry back in, sort of thinking, trying to recall in my mind the image of myself in the mirror wearing the new. Was it good? I can't remember. I'm too embarrassed to scurry out for another one because I'm so, you know, embarrassed about the whole business. Embarrassed.
Just get out of there.
Just get out of there. Well, this is what happens. Usually I never buy trousers. I've had the same pair of trousers for about the last 10 years. In fact, I bought some recently. But the thing is that I scurried out and took such a brief look that I completely misjudged it. They were awful. They didn't even fit.
Were those the big red, like Arabian Nights ones you wore for a long period?
That's the ones, yeah, with the big stars on them.
Yeah, they were no good.
They were rubbish.
You wore them for years.
Yeah. And yet some people have absolutely no qualms about this kind of thing. I was on the train the other day, right? And this lady, she reached up to the luggage rack to retrieve her newspaper or something. She was elderly. And the fellow sitting on the chair across the aisle, who was absolutely a big fat man, right? And there's no question about it.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be upset if I said
the
that.
The elderly and the fat.
Yeah. And their new band. What are you writing down?
I don't know. They just seem like good targets.
They're not targets. They happen to come into this conversation.
I'm joking, of course.
Well, you've made me look like I'm targeting the elderly and the fat, which I'm absolutely not.
Cut this bit out.
Says Joe, thinking, this is a pre-record. We can lose in the embarrassing stuff.
Mm.
So the fellow sitting across on the other side of the aisle, who was, let me say, a portly gentleman. He was massively fat. He gets up, right? And he very nicely says, oh, let me help you with that, to the lady. And so he reaches up for the newspaper. He reaches over her, right? So that the lady has to lean right back in her seat to avoid his massive belly, which has spilled out from his T-shirt that he was wearing, right? The T-shirt just rode right up over his huge belly. And he was shoving it right in this woman's face while he was reaching for the paper. She was going, no, it's okay. It's okay. I can get it. No, that's all right. Let me help you.
Nice sound effect.
That was the sound of
maybe
a big belly.
You know, volunteers for jobs like that.
Yeah.
Because it gives him a bit of physical contact.
Maybe. He seemed like a really nice man.
Mm.
But he wasn't bothered at all about the... I mean, I'm not saying he should necessarily be bothered about his body size, but it just seemed pretty wild, you know, that he would be so unfussed by his shirt riding up and just him doing this massive sexy belly dance on this old lady.
Okay. So there you go, trouser buying, fat people, the elderly, trains, all the main subjects of interest.
You said fat people, that's very offensive.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, because it's...
What should I have said? Portly gentleman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dress it up somehow.
Yeah. In a big pair of Arabian pantaloons.
With stars on them.
He's only necking, miss.
So I would like your advice, Adam.
Yeah.
Do you text? Do you like to text people?
I do it once in a while. The reception I have is not so good, so I
I'm a keen texter. I love to text. Do you, when you text someone, do you put a little kiss at the end?
No, I don't go for the kiss. No, I just go for the initial.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I mean, this is a factor in emailing as well, isn't it? How you sign off emails.
Actually, now you mention it, I go for the initial in an email when it's clear who it's from.
You do a kiss?
No kissing. Never.
No. You never kiss.
Or I put love.
You put love.
Yeah.
Love ad.
Yeah. In an email.
You see, when I first started texting many years ago, the person I used to text the most, my text buddy, he used to put a kiss.
Mm-hmm.
See you later. Bye. See you at the cinema. So I got
not
into the habit
kisses,
of...
Though, was it?
Not three kisses, just one. I'm exaggerating for effect. Yeah.
See you later.
Well, it's a weird thing, isn't it? Because he's not a man I would kiss.
Yeah.
I mean, not really even... I would kiss him on the cheek, but not... regularly. And you find yourself in funny situations when you put a kiss after a text. For instance, I was texting a friend, quite a new friend, and, you know, the kisses were flying. It was very mundane conversation, like meeting up and where are you going to be and so. But at the end of everything, it was a little kiss. So what do you do, like, for instance, so your opening one can have a kiss because maybe you think the conversation's not going to go that far.
Yeah.
But then we ended up having quite a long conversation and I was still doing the kiss at the end of each.
Well, you started kissing him too.
Yeah.
You are so easily led.
It's just a fun... I mean, it doesn't mean I want to kiss the friend necessarily.
Oh, it does.
Does it?
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the dangerous areas because he stopped putting kisses at the end of his
messages. He was getting freaked out.
Messages. I kept sending the kisses.
Did you?
Yeah. Okay, then. That sounds good. Can you imagine if in a real conversation you just, after every sentence, you just leant in and...
And then you might be like one of those Euro people who go for, one of the random people who go for a lip kiss.
A lip kiss. Oh. There's someone I'm working with on the thing I'm working on, quite a professional guy, and at the end of every email, whatever it's about, it's big kiss, small kiss, big hug, small hug, kiss.
How do you do a hug?
A circle, I do believe.
Is that a hug?
Well, I think so, unless it's something more racy.
I think it's... What if it's mouth, some other kind of mouth pleasure?
A tongue kiss?
Yeah.
I mean, these are quite business-like emails we're getting about, you know, photography tests and stuff. And it'll be, the tests look really good. See you on Monday. that was a tongue kiss I was doing there. But I'm not going to stop. I'm going to continue kissing because I think, you know, sometimes you have to take a view on whether to do that kind of thing in a message to your parents as well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or whether to do it, you know, sometimes the professional and personal boundary can be blurred. If you're working with someone important who you're also friendly with, is it good to give them a couple of kisses?
I just go for the casual
love ad.
Which I think for some people is probably a bit creepy anyway, but...
I'm going to carry on kissing.
You carry on, man. But I hope you take precautions.
A Simple Minds from 1982. And listen, I've got to correct some little mistakes I made. Simon Martin has kindly emailed in to point out that Takashi Miike didn't... No one's going to care about this apart from me and Simon. But Takashi Miike didn't direct Midnight Meat Train. It was Ryuhei Kitamura who directed Versus. It's a completely different kettle of fish.
I would say a lot of people would care about
that. No, but for Asian cinema fans, that's a terrible, sleepy Saturday morning mistake.
For any kind of cinema
fan. And I think I even said it last week as well on the podcast. Idiot hole. How am I going to hold my head up at nerd conventions?
I didn't say anything in the week, but my mum immediately was on the phone.
Was she?
Joe, did I hear right? Did you just say that Takashi Miike directed Meat Train? What an idiot hole.
That's depressing. I'm sorry. I apologise to your mum.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen, it's time for some more Text the Nations. Here's another extraordinary listener-made jingle, right?
Yes, this is from someone called Zav. I don't know if it's not Zavi, is it? Otherwise he'd be going out of business. Shut up. This is Zav's jingle, and it's a kind of a Stephen Hawking-type Text the Nation effort.
Explanation, text, what if I don't want to? Explanation, but I'm using email, is that a problem? It doesn't matter,
Wow, it's frightening, isn't it? Both of those jingles we've used this morning, sort of portend a future of kind of very crappy robots taking over.
Radiohead-style
like
technological alienation.
Yeah, wouldn't that be disappointing if instead of a sort of sexy Terminator-style apocalyptic future, there was a sort of Steve Jobs, PC world, sort of laptop-style takeover, and they all spoke like those automatic voices?
I think it would be exciting and fun.
It'd be more dealable with, wouldn't it? Less frightening.
Well, at least you would know who was who. The scary thing is when you can't tell who's human and who's a robot.
Well, that's not going to happen for a bit, is it? Because the voices are still very synthesized.
Yeah, still rubbish.
Yeah. Anyway, Text the Nation this week is about sort of disgusting personal habits that you have that you do almost subconsciously in company.
We were talking a little bit about, we were just getting to the whole area of smelling things before. Are you someone that smells your socks?
No.
One of the nice bits in A Fish Called Wanda is when John Cleese's character Archie Leach is sat on his bed, and they're sort of illustrating the passionless marriage that he has. Mm. And he sort of very robotically sits down on his bed, removes his socks, and just gives them a little sniff before climbing into bed. And I it's something that I've done. Have you never done that?
To see whether they need washing or not.
Is that the theory?
I might do that, yeah. Or sniff the underarm of a used shirt to see whether you can get another day.
Get another day out of it. Well, I always assume that it's going to need washing. Sometimes I just like to have a little sniff out of curiosity.
Here are some stuff we've had from listeners. Mimi says, I have an habit.
Ooh.
Now that's the correct English, isn't it?
Because no,
habit
it's
begins
not
with H.
An habit.
I have an habit and discovered that we are a lot to do it. I smell the sweat created by my watch on my wrist.
Ah,
it's addictive
yes.
When you start to smell it. It's difficult to get away from it. This is something people used to do at school, didn't they?
Sure. Especially with leather watch straps, they can build up quite a stinky little sweat.
And I've never done that. Is it? It's a nice stink, is it?
No, it's not. It's unpleasant. But you see, this is the thing.
You keep coming back for it.
It's like smelling your own airborne toxic events. Mm. There's something fascinating about it.
Yeah. Here's one from Erica. I really, truly enjoy when I'm alone trying not to swallow my spit and seeing how much I can keep in my mouth before I drool on myself.
Wow, I do remember that from when I was littler.
Do you?
Yeah.
Erica, are you not? Are you sure Erica isn't in some sort of an institution?
Like a big lake of spittle. I do remember that. The other one, of course, is after you've drunk some kind of chemically fizzy pop, your spit gets a certain consistency that enables you to do very long drools, which you can then retract into your mouth.
Mm,
that's a
lovely,
slightly different thing.
Lovely. Jo, on her way to Cornwall, I think it's a her because it's a J-O, says my husband, and she's got a husband, well, you know, that. Well, anyway, let's not get into this. My husband was once given a keyring with his friend's long toenail on it, which he'd grown especially for it.
Oh,
so
dear.
He'd grown his toenail extra long and turned it into a keyring.
Toenail as well. That's grim.
Jim from Wrexham. I pick out the open inverted commas eye gold, close inverted commas, subconsciously mid-conversation and eat it.
Oh, I've never heard of anyone actually eating.
No, that's peculiar. I'd like to know what it tastes like.
Eye gold. He's talking about sleep, some people call it, don't they?
Yeah, that builds up in your eye.
Eye gunk.
Here's an extraordinary
one.
Eye
gold.
This is anonymous, I think, for reasons that'll become obvious. When he's watching TV, my stepdad likes to regurgitate bits of dinner into his mouth, not so subtly disguised as coughing. He then chews on whatever treasures he's found and swallows it back down. He thinks no one's watching, but me and my sister know exactly what's going on. He's probably pleased when we have to leave the room in disgust so he can carry on with more gusto. That's pretty revolting.
That is a good one.
It was one amazing one.
Have you never done that?
Everyone's done that, I think.
From time to
And you
time.
Pick your teeth. I mean, you're not going to spit it out, are you? You just give it a little munch.
And you do pretend. You do. But the thing is that you get busted every now and again, right? Because everyone knows you finished your meal a while ago. Suddenly, why is he chewing still?
Well, it's the idea of this guy coughing. And then the little dramatic pause you'd leave. You don't do it straight away because that's too obvious. You'd leave a little pause and then... and then do the chewing.
Sometimes it's quite welcome.
What, for the people
like
around
second,
you?
No, for the person who is
of course.
A little second course.
It's tasty, yeah. But listen, here's the most revolting one from John in Hounslow. I used to have a disgusting habit, which I ceased upon quitting eating Wotsits. While eating the delicious salty puffs, I would chew plenty at once, then grab a fresh Wotsit and spit out the chewed up mass of mashed cheesy puff gunk into a sort of ball on the end, so it resembled a savoury lollipop.
Sorry. My
computer
just restarted in absolute revulsion.
Then I placed it back into the packet and let it solidify over a few minutes. Then I would eat it again. It had a different texture and tasted like a glorious treat I made up myself.
Sweet.
Observers were known to throw up.
I'm sure.
So that's amazing. That's like a whole new manufacturing process. I mean, that's sort of going into animal kingdom behavior, isn't it?
Really, that's going beyond.
That's becoming subhuman.
Mother Nature has not gotten anything like that in its amazingly bizarre locker.
That was the end of the so-called highlights from this week's Six Music Radio Show. Now there's just a little time left for one final linky from the two baboon men that you call Adam and Joe.